The next aspect of our functionally oriented history is going to be about nutrition and lifestyle and exercise and some of the things as far as the person's habits. It's really important that you question people about their habits because what'll typically happen, and this is really common actually, is that you say to the person, "So how's your diet?" "Oh, I eat a really good diet." And that's where they want to leave it. I eat a really good diet. I eat whole grains and I eat organic food. And people think just because they're eating an organic food diet that they're eating a diet that's healthy for them and their diet is supporting them. And in fact, their diet may not be supporting them and they're just thinking, well, there's something else going on here. Oh, my diet's pretty good. I don't understand why I'm having these problems. So we're going to look at what are the kinds of questions that you want to ask, and then we'll take a look at the actual sample questionnaire. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocol. So, of course, you want to know what foods do they generally eat and what do they avoid and why do they avoid them? So, you may have somebody who avoids certain foods because of religious beliefs. Maybe they're kosher and they only eat foods that are kosher. Maybe they have particular food preferences and they avoid certain foods. Maybe they avoid foods that they really, if they're going to avoid, you need to be looking at how do you get the nutrients that those foods would normally have given them. What foods do they eat? Maybe they're on a gluten-free diet. Maybe they have certain allergies. Maybe it's just a matter of preference. So you find out what are they eating and what are they avoiding. And I like to do this with a food frequency list. There's actually a couple of ways that I do this because I feel like if you ask them for this information in many ways, you actually get the clear picture. So I'll start out by just saying, tell me what the typical foods you eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner are. And I have it separated into breakfast, lunch, dinner. I get a sense that way. Then I do the food frequency lists. And I have lists, which I'm sharing with you, of all the different foods, and they get to say whether they eat them frequently or infrequently. But we're not leaving it at just that because somebody might say, oh, I hardly ever drink coffee, only a couple of times a week. But we might think that that's frequent, versus somebody else might say, well, I hardly ever eat that. It means like less than twice a year. So we want to ask that, and I ask that in that way, and you'll see the form itself. And the third way you can do it, I don't do it very often, but it's a 24-hour recall. Say, okay, I want you to write down everything you've eaten over the last 24 hours. And of course, the fourth way is the most accurate, is actually having them keep a good food journal. But when you first see them, it's unlikely that they're going to be having had done that before unless you've given them a form and asked them to do it. And it's all up to you how you want to run your practice. If you want to be asking them all the stuff in advance, giving them lots of questionnaires, having them fill it out, then you have a pretty good picture by the time they come in. You may want to have them do a 3-day diet intake. Depends on what I'm looking at and what they're looking for. I may, in some cases, have them do a 3-day diet intake before I talk to them the first time. Other times, I just do the food frequencies and have them fill out a basic questionnaire just to get a sense of where they are. Okay. So food frequency surveys are really, really helpful. Eating habits and environment, right? Do they eat on the run? Do they eat by their computer? Do they sit down to a nice candlelit dinner and hold hands with their family members and do gratitudes before dinner? What is the situation? What is the environment? Because that's going to affect how they digest their food, right? Because we're looking at not just what they're eating, but how they're eating it to determine what's actually getting absorbed and utilized. It's really important to ask them about their hydration. Not do you drink water? Do you drink enough water? How much water do you drink? How many glasses of water do you drink? Get a sense of how many ounces they drink and really help reinforce that they really do need to be drinking about half their body weight in fluid ounces. There are a few exceptions to that. One of the exceptions is if they are juicing a lot and they're drinking a couple of quarts of vegetable juice a day, well, they may not need a full half their body weight in fluid ounces if they're drinking that much, or if they're eating lots of very juicy foods and not very much in the way of dry foods. So you'll modify that based on what else you know about them. But the general rule of thumb is about half your body weight. Now, again, they're heavily exercising. They live in Arizona in the desert, and they're sweating and losing their fluids. And actually, people that live in the desert don't actually realize that they're sweating because the sweat evaporates as soon as it hits the surface, but they really are. So finding out how much exercise they're doing, how much sweating they're doing, right? If they're going in saunas on a regular basis, you better believe you're going to have to up that hydration. So these are all the questions you want to be finding out. Then, of course, you want to find out about their unhealthy habits, right? How much alcohol do they drink? How much caffeine? How much tobacco? It's not enough for them to say, no, hardly ever. You want to quantify it. Really ask, and that could be through your forms and then clarified in the interview or just done in the interview. It just depends on the way that you really feel comfortable. And the more you do this, the more you're going to really get a sense of what feels the most comfortable for you. And then you're going to ask about their habit, their exercise habits. I'm going to have a whole page on exercise habits and a whole separate little questionnaire to really get a sense of the balance of exercise they're doing. You want to also look in the lifestyle at their sleep habits. And again, I have a whole questionnaire on sleep habits and what's their stress level like. Again, whole questionnaire about what kind of stresses they've been under. And when we look at the adrenal testing module, we'll talk a lot more detail about the kinds of stress, where the sources of those stresses, and how it's going to be affecting their body. So it's really important to just get a sense of where their stresses lie, because it could be emotional stress. It could be physiologic stress, like an area of pain and inflammation. And it could be dietary stress. So we want to find out where those stresses are coming from so we have a sense of how we can help them to remove some of those. So we're going to look at the diets and habits questionnaire. We have three different forms for you. Actually, we have a fourth one. We have a nutrition and lifestyle habits online form that's a thorough history of food habits. This is something that you can fill out, get a sense of what it feels like to fill this out, get a sense of, is there a way that you want to ask these questions that are, it's different from the way I'm asking them because it's more like you, or anything at all, you're welcome to be modifying this. And as we go through, I'll be giving you a resource for how you can get this online program for actually putting them in. We'll just fill some of this stuff out. You can put an email address. So when you fill this out, you'll get a sense of this form and what you can do. If you wanted to copy some of these questions, all you'd have to do would be to do something like this and then copy and then open up a Word file or some sort of a word processor that you have, paste it. You'll have to do some cleanup, but you'll have all the questions there. But like I said, we also have a Word file and a PDF file, but they're not exactly identical. So if I were to just do this, and when I'm filling these out, I just put numbers in. And then I say continue. Where and with whom do you eat? Right? This is an important question. So I give them choices. How often do they eat at home at the table? How often do they eat at their desk? How often do they eat at work or at someone else's home, in restaurants, alone, with friends, with family members, with co-workers, and on the run? And I give them lots of choices. Never, once a month or less, once a week or less, twice a week, three, four, five, six, and daily. So you may not have to give them all those choices, but I kind of like that because it helps me to really fine tune like where they're most, and they may have a misconception. I don't eat at my desk that often, but when you figure it all out, that's where they're mostly eating. So I think I can get away with not filling this whole thing piece out. Yeah, I can. Good. Then I want to know, what are their daily habits? So how many times do they currently eat and at what times? And some of them are going to say, well, it's different from day to day. Well, that's fine. Just note that too. These are the things you want to know. What foods do they typically eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Do you eat between meals? If so, how often do you eat between meals? What time of day, what foods do you typically eat? This is going to be important stuff for you to know, especially if the foods that they're eating between meals are very high glycemic, high in sugars. Then you're going to be wondering about this person's glucose handling and the fact that they probably have insulin elevated in their bloodstream all day because they're eating sweet fruits or breads or crackers or whatever in between meals. And that keeps their insulin levels elevated all day, which means that if they're coming in talking about the belly fat they're trying to get rid of or they're feeling burned out, insulin resistance could be a possibility. So we want to know about that very important half. So we say continue. And now we're going into the section of food choices. See the green up at the top. So what are your typical food choices and patterns? So I love to ask this question, what are the three worst foods you eat during the average week, and what are the three healthiest? And what the answers to this can give you the hugest clues about their diet, right? When somebody writes that their worst foods throughout the week are almond butter and quinoa and let's see, sunflower seeds. You're going, whoa, what are the healthiest foods they eat, right? You're going, whoa, if they think those are the worst foods they eat, or maybe it's dates or something or bananas, compared to the healthiest, they're probably eating a lot of greens and a lot of really good stuff. So you look at that. But then somebody who puts that the healthiest foods they eat during the week are whole wheat toast. Let's see, whole wheat toast and broccoli and salmon. Well, it's not too bad. But that's the healthiest. Where's the greens? Where's the vegetables? Where's the brassicas? Okay, well, they had the broccoli. Okay. So you just want to get a sense. It really gives you a lot of good information. The foods they eat most frequently, and that's a clue because sometimes people are allergic to. They develop allergies to the foods they eat most frequently. So you want to find out what are the foods they eat most frequently. Because if you're going to be putting somebody through an elimination diet, at the beginning, you're going to be eliminating the foods they eat most frequently until they can prove that they're innocent. List your favorite foods. So, if you're designing a diet program for this person, you want to include a lot of their favorite foods. If a lot of their favorite foods are really unhealthy for them, what you want to be able to do is tell them how to make substitutes for their favorite foods that are healthier. What foods do you crave the most? The foods that they crave the most are either related to emotional eating, it could be related to blood sugar imbalance, or it could be related to food allergies. What do you consider binge foods? Right? Those the foods that they binge on again are like the foods they crave. Only you want to know what they consider binge foods. Like, you know, if they binge on steamed broccoli, that's not exactly a binge. If they binge on crackers, that's pretty bad. If they binge on, maybe their binge foods are actually healthy foods, but then in excess. So say maybe they binge on almonds. Okay, that could be really caloric. Not a great idea because it's too high in fat to binge on it, but that gives you an idea of, well, at least they're at the point where they've replaced the unhealthy binge foods with the healthier binge foods. And then you look at, you know, having to work with them on not so much changing what they're eating, but the pattern and the emotional stuff behind it. What are their least favorite foods? You don't want to design a program that has a lot of arugula in it for a person that hates arugula. You want to have the most idea of compliance. So you find them. And if a lot of the foods on their least favorite food lists are very healthy and things you want them to do, you may try to help them find ways to sneak those in, like in a smoothie or a soup or some way like that, maybe in a cracker. What percentage of your dietary intake is raw or living? Uncooked vegan fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, sprouted grains. That's a good thing to know. Well, we don't have to push people towards 100% raw all the time. We want them to have a high percentage of their diet as raw foods. And my understanding, looking at studies, talking to folks that run some various clinics, like Dr. Clement, he said that he's got some studies that shows that when you get below 80%, 75, 80% of your food as raw, you start to see inflammatory markers increase in the immune system. So that's good to know. You know, can we move this person from wherever they are up to about 75% raw? And it may be easier than you think to do that with a person. If you eat grains, what percentage are whole and unrefined? You know, people who are on a healthy diet, they're, oh yeah, I eat a really healthy diet. Meanwhile, they're eating organic white flour products. You know, so you really want to know about this stuff and about what percentage is organically grown. It's pretty impossible to get 100% organically grown foods unless you have your own garden and you eat mostly from it and you get raw nuts and seeds or that are organic. And, you know, you can do it. It's just pretty challenging. And so we look at helping people to go as much raw organic as possible. But, you know, it's good to know if they're not deliberately seeking out organic, then we have some education to do here, right? So the next section is their food frequency. And this is the beginning of the food frequency. I have a more detailed food frequency, but this is the overview of food frequency. If you really want to get into it in major detail, I have a whole questionnaire on that. So I want to know how often coffee, tea, beer, wine, soft drinks, sugar-free soft drinks, vegetable juice, bottled or canned juice. So these are the things that we're looking to see. Well, how often do they have these in their diet, right? If they have organic poultry and you want to find out, is it organic or not when they're eating animal products? So maybe they have it twice a month, not a big deal. Are they having it three times a day? Then maybe a problem. If you drink coffee, how much and what type do you drink? If you drink tea, how much and what type do you drink? Now, of course, you don't have to ask all of these on paper, but you can ask them in person. You just look at their food frequency. So how much are you drinking? How often? And just jot your notes down on your sidebar. It's up to you how you do this. And the more you do it, the more you'll figure out what you really like. If you use oils, what kind of oils do you do? This is really important, guys, because if they're using organic safflower oil from the health food store because they think it's healthy, you've got to educate them. You want to be educating them in terms of the oxidation that occurs in those kinds of oils. Talk to them about good oils versus not good oils. And you have that, and this is not the time for us to go into that in detail. But these are the things that you either have been trained or are being trained in the certification program. So our next section is about their commitment. How committed are they to make changes? How committed are they to making changes in their diet? So to what extent? It's interesting, though. I've had people fill these out. I said, to what extent? Well, I'm willing to do some things, but, you know, there's no way I'm going to go vegetarian. I'm not going to give up my burgers and blah, 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 blah. And then they'll come in and you know, I'll send them some stuff to read. And they come in and say, you know what? I think I'm going to go vegetarian. That happens sometimes. But you have to find out what their commitment is. Look, I just want to make the minimum changes necessary to have a little bit of improvement in you know, my belly fat and to lose this weight. I want them to list all the foods that would be very hard to stop eating, but they're willing to work on if they need to. I want to list all the foods they're unwilling to eat, no matter what the health advantages. They say, you know, I've tried it over and over. I will not eat arugula. I don't care if it's going to make me, you know, look like a movie star and have a life up to 200. I'm not going to eat it. I just can't stand it. And then you have them talk about what are the foods that they love so much that they're unwilling to give up, no matter the cost to their health. And you may be thinking like, whoa, so is that true? Does that happen? Yes, it happens. And you want to know what those things are. You want to look at their boundaries. So you want to meet them where they're at and help move them to where they really want to be. Then you want to find out what other dietary plans have they tried. You know, if you love putting people on a vegan diet, but they tell you, I went raw, did it for 2 years, I felt miserable, nothing helped. That's not where you're going to go with that. You have to find out what they tried, how it worked. What was the benefits? What was the downside? How did they enjoy it? How were they able to stick with it? It's really helpful to find this information. And I really just like getting it on paper. You could always clarify things once you're in the interview with them. Let's take a look at how well equipped they are. If you have somebody who lives in a studio apartment, doesn't even have a kitchen, doesn't even have a sink, doesn't have access to stuff, you want them to be able to make healthy food, but you have to go with where they're at. So I just ask them, you know, there's probably other equipment I could have included on here. I want to know if they have a blender, whether it's a regular or high-powered blender. It's going to determine which recipes I might be encouraging them to try at first, because some recipes just don't do well in a regular blender versus others that do really well. I want to be knowing how reasonable it is to get these people on regular smoothies. So then a dehydrator. if we're looking at gluten-free and we're looking to help them replace some of their crackers and cookies, and we want them to make stuff, they don't have a dehydrator, it's something we can talk to them about, but we can also suggest alternatives of places where they could purchase some of this stuff. Same thing, food processor, juicer, spiral slicer, mandolin, those are kind of more advanced things, but you really want to know what do they have in their kitchen. So this is the review. They get to look it over, what they've done, submit it, a thank you message, and they'll get a copy of that in their inbox, and I'll get a copy of it as well. So let's take a look at some of these other nutrition evaluations, and then we'll go into exercise. We've got this food frequency checklist. Again, it repeats the question, list the worst foods, the healthiest foods, how often do you eat in restaurants, on the run, but then it has a really detailed list. These are questions you want to ask on these questions. I first developed this very detailed food frequency list because we were doing it for the food allergy program, and I wanted to be able to see what they were eating and also help them to design what I called a rare foods diet, like the foods that they weren't eating that much. So it's a very detailed list. You're welcome to use all or most of it. I ask again on the never, once a week or less, once a month or less, etc. So I asked them about their foods, any other foods, and the same kind of questions that were on the other ones. So really, it needs to be merged together when you're asking these people. Don't like answering the same questions over and over. So we look at nutrition and lifestyle habits, different kinds of diets that they're eating. Very similar questions, but this is, the pre-online form of the thing. And this is just the frequency. This is a little bit less detail because it's harder to get that you consume a minimum of 3 days or more each week. Okay. And what snacks? And then there's we're talking about tobacco, alcohol. It's a little bit more detailed on those. And so you've got lots of options for designing your own forms or for using some of the forms that as I've given them to you. So let's take a look at exercise. Here's a form that you can use to keep track of their exercise habits. You can either have them fill this out as part of a new patient packet on a physical piece of paper. You can send them an online form and have them print it and fill it out. You can create an online form from this that they can fill out online and ship back to you. Or you could just sit and ask them these questions as you're doing your interview with them. Maybe you just ask them a little basic stuff of exercise on the main questionnaire. Then you can go into the details and jot your answers down on this form. However you use it, it's up to you. And depending on what kind of clients you usually do, you may be getting more or less into the exercise habits. I think it's a good idea to find out what kinds of exercise they're doing and what balance. So how often are they doing it and for how long? So what kind of stretching are they doing? Maybe they're doing a yoga class, for an hour twice a week. Maybe they're doing cardio and aerobics is an exercise bike or running. You want to find those things out so that you have a sense of what their level of exercise is, activity or inactivity. Also, have them rate how motivated they are for exercising. It's really important to know because as you're going through and trying to help them to create a really healthy exercise pattern, if they hate exercise, you want to know that up front because you want to find really fun things. You want to learn how to make it fun. But if they're a jock that just loves to go out there, you can just pile it on. You want to have them list for you any problems that they have that limit their activity. Perhaps they've had surgery on a shoulder or on a knee, and that's going to limit what they can do. Maybe they tell you that they have a shoulder that dislocates if they lift weights in the upper body. You want to know all those sorts of things. You want to find out if they feel unusually fatigued after they exercise. If yes, they may be suffering from adrenal fatigue because that's a hallmark sign. They feel good, they go out, they exercise, and then they're in bed for 3 days afterwards because they're exhausted from the exercise. If that's the case, you want to really tailor the quantity of exercise and have them do stuff that's going to encourage them to heal rather than drain them even more. You want to know if their muscles cramp during exercise. What might that be? Might be an electrolyte imbalance. Maybe they're low in magnesium or potassium. You want to know that. Do they feel unusually sore between workouts? Because there's a buildup of lactic acid during working out. And if they're feeling unusually sore, maybe there's some detoxification issues. Maybe their body's too acid and you want to alkalize them to help clear out the extra lactic acid. So whatever that is, you just want to know about it. You want to find out how much recovery time they give themselves, because it's really not a great idea to just exercise day after day after day without a break. So knowing what they're doing will help you to give them exercise recommendations that make sense for them. You want to know how much they sweat. You know, do they usually sweat? Do they drink water before, during, and after exercise? You also may want to ask them, are they into those sports drinks? Do they do Gatorade or even the, you know, health food store version of Gatorade before, during, and after exercise? Because it's really not a good idea to do. You want them to drink pure water before and during and after exercise, not those sugary things. Those things can be okay during something like a marathon where you naturally have to replenish your fuel. But if they're going to the gym and working out for half an hour to an hour, even up to 2 hours, they really don't need to be replenishing during, and it actually thwarts the beneficial effects of growth hormone surges if they're doing these kinds of beverages, because that causes an insulin spike and then interferes with their ability to make growth hormone, which will then help them to make more lean muscle. So you want to find out what they're doing that might be thwarting their exercise attempts and help them and guide them. And all this information doesn't have to be collected in one shot. It can be collected over time in multiple sittings. You can start working on their food first. You can look at some other things when you want to get into more details. You just have to play it out and find what works for you. I'm giving you all the things that I feel and have found in my over 20 years of experience, what's important to know. And you'll be able to tailor this to your own needs. Let's take a quick look at sleep habits and our sleep questionnaire. It's short and sweet. It's just one page long. Again, like the exercise, you can just incorporate these questions into your interview, or you could give them this form to fill out in, you know, whatever version, whatever form you'd like. It's totally up to you. So it's always important to find out, when do they usually go to bed and when do they usually get up, and what kind of exceptions there might be throughout the week. On average, the number of hours of sleep they get. Rarely are you going to see somebody who's getting greater than 10. You might see somebody getting between 8 and 10, but more likely you're going to see folks that are getting between 6 and 8 or less than 6. And if you ask further about that less than 6, some of them might admit to getting way less than 6. You want to find out if they have trouble falling asleep or trouble staying asleep. If they're having trouble falling asleep, then that means that there may be some disruption in, say, their melatonin levels or their cortisol levels right at bedtime, versus if they have trouble staying asleep, it may be related to blood sugar imbalance. It could be related to a cortisol spike in the middle of the night. It could be related to old traumas that they've had where they may have been attacked or molested in the middle of the night. There's a lot of things that you want to ask about in terms of the sleep. How often do they sleep through the night, right? These questions might be better stated as, how often do you have trouble falling asleep? How often do you have trouble staying asleep? How often do you sleep through the night or not? How would you rate the quality of your sleep? How do you feel when you wake up? Some folks wake up feeling bright and bushy-tailed, and other folks wake up feeling miserable. Even if they get 8 or 10 hours of sleep, that's usually related to adrenal fatigue. Could be sleep apnea that's preventing them from having a real deep sleep. You want to find out about the darkened room. Folks that don't sleep in a darkened room will tend to have problems with melatonin, and that may be what's keeping them awake, keeping them from being able to fall asleep or stay asleep. If they watch TV or use the computer right before going to sleep, that could affect their melatonin levels, and you want to know that, and you want to coach them on at least shutting off that computer and TV an hour to two before they go to sleep, preferably longer. You want to know if they wake up to an alarm clock or they just wake up naturally. Makes a big difference. Also, if they wake up to an alarm clock, it's quite possible that they're waking up in the middle of a sleep cycle. And in the Before Be Gone program, I go through it in a lot more detail about the sleep cycle and how to help to understand that sleep cycle and figure out what your sleep cycle is, what the length, because the length of a sleep cycle could be anywhere from 1 hour to 2 hours. Average is 1.5 hours. But when they're waking up in the middle of that sleep cycle, basically that sleep cycle didn't do them any good. So we may want to extend their sleep a little bit back, or actually shorten their sleep a little bit so that they have an even number of sleep cycles. Insomnia, if they've ever been diagnosed with insomnia, are they on any medication? Have they ever been told that they snore? Because usually people don't know that they snore. It's by a sleep partner telling them they snore. You want to know if they have sleep apnea. And the sleep apnea is a diagnosis, right, that they've gotten maybe from going to a doctor. They've done a sleep study. So has anybody ever told you that you have sleep apnea, or use a CPAP machine, which goes along with the sleep apnea? And if they do, how long have they been using it? How effective is it? And then anything else they want to tell you about their sleep habits. So this gives you a sense of how well they're sleeping, if lack of sleep is contributing to their health challenges, what some of the causes may be that they're just unaware of, like the TV or the lights in the room, a lot of things like that. So you want to find these things out so you know how you can coach this person and how you can explain to them how their sleep might be affecting their health and how their sleep might be affecting their belly fat and how they feel their energy the next day. There's a lot more, like I said, a lot more detail about that in the Before Be Gone program, and also in the Insulin Resistance Practitioner program, which goes along with you would get the Before Be Gone program with that and study about insulin resistance. And we go into a lot of detail about how to balance the sleep cycle. So with the exercise and sleep habits, back out to our slides. We've already gone through this. I'll recap what we talked about on the questionnaires. We want to know how often they exercise, for how long, what's the balance of yoga core cardio, ratio of cardio to resistance, how long it takes them to recover, how sore do they get between workout, do they have any cramps, what's their water intake. And we went into a lot more detail on the form. And then again, with the sleep habits, typical bedtime, their usual wake-up time, average number of hours they sleep, the quality of their sleep, any difficulties they may have falling asleep or staying asleep, the quality of their sleep, their environment during the sleep, like whether it's dark or bright or noisy, and how refreshed are they when they awaken. So we've reviewed nutrition, exercise, and sleep. Next, we'll move into the stress piece of it.